Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation, text number 6. Etanyapi tu karmani, sangam tyaktva palani cha, kartavya niti me parata, nishitam atam uttamam. Etani, all these, api, certainly, to, but, karmani, activities, sangam, association, tyaktva, renouncing, palani, results, cha, also, kartavyani, should be done as duty. Iti, thus, may, my, parata, osanaprita, nishitam, definite, matam, opinion, uttamam, the best. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, osanaprita, that is my final opinion. Purport, although all sacrifices are purifying, one should not expect any result from by such performances. In other words, all sacrifices which are meant for material advancement in life should be given up. But sacrifices that purify one's existence and elevate one to the spiritual plane should not be stopped. Everything that leads to Krishna consciousness must be encouraged. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is said that any activity which leads one to devotional service to the Lord should be accepted. That is the highest criteria of religion. A devotee of the Lord should accept any kind of work, sacrifice, or charity which will help him in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord. Etanyapi tu karmani sangam tyaktva palani cha kartavya niti me parta nishitam matam uttamam. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O Sanaprita. That is my final opinion. So the idea is to come to the platform of always thinking about Krishna and never forgetting him. So that's only possible when the mind is completely clear, so that we can actually experience Krishna. And when the mind is clouded, then we can't actually experience Krishna. We can't visualize him, but to speak of feel his presence. But there's a transcendental television in everyone's heart. Unfortunately, presently it's broken. So Krishna consciousness is a science of repairing our television. So we can turn on to channel Krishna and sing his name, remember his name, remember his form, his associates, experience his qualities, and be present in his pastimes, his lila. And his lila is the nature of bhakti, of love, prema. In other words, in the spiritual world, there's nothing but prema, because everyone there, their bodies are made out of bliss. If your body's made out of bliss, there's not much more you can do than be blissful. And everyone's body there is fully conscious of the bliss, ever increasingly conscious of love and bliss, and therefore there's nothing else to do there, because your consciousness is constantly increasing in feelings of love and devotion to Krishna. So that's not a bad thing. Here, we're conscious of our devotion to our the material energy in different ways. But it doesn't give us neither happiness nor enlightenment. It gives us a lot of difficulty. So therefore, one has to practice in the material world to come to the platform of spiritual consciousness. Now, there are activities which are purifying to the mind, and there are activities which cloud the mind. So especially activities that lead to Ichcha, Dvesha, Samutena, Dvandva, Mohena, Bharata, Sarvabhutani, Samoham, Sargeyanti, Parantapa. That all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the desire, by the duality of desire and hate. So that's our position, is that when we're not conscious of Krishna, then we're only conscious of desire and hate. Basically speaking, our whole experience in the material world is that we're hankering to become the center of attention, that is God, and we're lamenting the fact that we can't quite do it, no matter how hard we try. Our lives are never perfectly in the center of everyone else's attention. Therefore, one has to, if one wants to work for one's real benefit, spiritual benefit, one has to do activities which would purify the mind. And the first one is that if we're not attached to the results of our work, and we work as we are obligated, then gradually the mind will become purified by thinking about Krishna. In other words, Krishna is the personality who can actually purify our consciousness. And generally speaking, in karma yoga, which is mentioned here, one does things dutifully, but in the background there is Vishnu, because Krishna has defined what's duty and what's not duty. So therefore, in the Vanashram system, everyone's duty is clearly defined. Generally, for the most part, in civilized society, there are people who have the duty of service, some have the duty of organization, some have the duty of instruction, some have the duty of providing resources. So everyone has some duty, and they do it. And, of course, there's fruit, there's results of the work. If you put seeds into the ground, you can expect there's going to be some plant that's going to grow. So it's not that the agriculturalists, they plow the land and put the seeds, but they don't expect anything to come out. They just do it as duty. And if something comes out, they may cultivate it. They may harvest it. No, they expect fruits. But when they're performing the sacrifice, charity, and austerity, they do it to purify the consciousness, not to get better material resources. In other words, those who want nice material resources, like the Shudras or the Vaishyas, or even the Kshatriyas, they may get those resources, but ultimately they understand the goal of life is to purify their consciousness. And therefore the Kshatriyas practice, even when Kshatriyas, austerity, charity, and penance, in order to qualify themselves, at least at the end of life, in order to enter into pure spiritual consciousness. Just like Ambarish Maharaj is a good example, Savayamana Krishna, Padara Vindayo, Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Vardhane. So Maharaj Ambarish, first of all, he fixed his mind upon Krishna. So how do you fix your mind upon Krishna? You have to hear about Krishna and try to hear in such a way as to think about Krishna. So that's our first business, is to think about Krishna. Now, generally speaking, we're so busy doing everything else, the last thing we do is usually think about Krishna. But that's actually the goal. In the spiritual world, there is no material progress. the gopis don't make twice as many garlands every day in order to increase the flower business. Every day they just make nicer garlands for Krishna, that's all. And the idea was not to get the first prize for garland making. That Sudevi got the grand prize for garland making this year. And everyone stands up and applauds Sudevi. She's put into the Hall of Fame for garland making. No, there's no... The only desire is to please Krishna. Because Krishna is the reservoir of love. And from him, the whole experience is unlimited affection and love coming from Krishna. So everyone, because they're made of the same energy that Krishna is, we're all made of the same energy, therefore spontaneously, that natural love and affection for Krishna becomes more and more intense eternally, as Krishna's love and affection becomes more and more intense by experiencing love and affection of his devotees. And that's all anyone's interested in. But it manifests itself in the flowers and the fruits and the dancing. It manifests itself in everything that they do, but it's all a manifestation of prema, everything. Therefore, they're not concerned about... The only fruit that they want is Krishna's happiness. There's nothing else that they really care about. And here in the material world, we have to work. Krishna says, Nahi kashchit shenama pi jati tishtatya karma krit karyate yavasha karma sarva prakriti jarina. That all living entities are forced to act helplessly according to the three modes. And therefore no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So we have to act. Now if we're acting in order to glorify ourselves, then we're wasting our time. If we think there's going to be some result that's going to make me more comfortable, more glorifiable, we're going to get some dhanam, janam, sundarim, followers, or wealth, or whatever else. But these things don't make any sense because we have nothing to do with the material world except the fact that we're attached to it. Therefore, if we work here without expectation of getting into some kind of superior situation, materially speaking, but trying to get into a superior consciousness of Krishna, then whatever we're doing will be successful. There may be some success, there may be some failure, but the real criteria of success or failure is how much we're developing our love for Krishna, our awareness of, and therefore naturally our love for Krishna. That's the real criteria of success in the material world. And therefore, everyone is given in the Vedic culture some duty to do. But what is the Varnashram system really about? It's just doing your duty so you can get something to eat, to maintain the body, so you can chant Hare Krishna, making things as simple as possible. And at the same time, as one advances up the ladder from Shudra to Vaishya to Kshatriya to Brahman, then gradually one loses one's taste for material sense gratification because of the superior consciousness one is developing. So that's Varnashram. Keep things as simple as possible. Now in modern society, people are trying to make things as complicated as possible. This idea of just work enough so you can survive, so you can get what's necessary, is just like beyond people's consciousness. What do you do? It'd be boring if you didn't have your video games to play, your internet to go on Facebook, your gym to do your exercises. People think that life would be boring. That's because life is boring. It's the same thing. Punak punas charavana. It's the same thing over and over again. A lot of advertisement, a lot of expectation, a lot of hope for happiness, and a lot of disappointment. And if you're young, you think, well, things are not so bad. I get a little happy, I squeeze a little happiness out of life. But just wait till you're old, and the body squeezes you. Instead of squeezing the happiness out of the body squeezes all happiness out of you. But people don't think like that. They think, I'm going to be young forever. This is called the Peter Pan syndrome. That I'm never going to grow up. Only old people grow up. But I'm young, so I'm going to be young forever and ever and ever. Therefore, one has to see things with a rational mind. Although we're living in a society of technology, ever-expanding propaganda about the wonderful advancements that everyone's making, that you won't have to do anything in the future. You just put your coin in the machine, and the machine wakes you up. It puts you in the shower, dries you off, turns on the internet for you so you can play all the games, puts the food in your mouth, rubs your stomach so it digests, and then puts you back to sleep. So you don't do anything, you just run by machine. So this is people's hope. In the future, everything will be done. That's what they're trying to do. You know, they have these machines now for vacuuming. Krishna forbid you had to get up and actually move a broom. How barbaric. No, you press the remote. That's becoming difficult for people. It's too much effort. So they have to implant something in your brain so that you just desire that the remote is pressed. And even that will become difficult after some time. So technology is simply making people foolish and lazy. But actually, this complications is actually making people useless in some respect. People are unemployed, and therefore they become bored even more than normal because they're unengaged and therefore they become mischievous. And the people ultimately, technology behind the technology, didn't invent the technology, believe it or not, for the comfort and happiness of everyone else. They invented the technology to control people because that's what the material world is all about. The real happiness is I'm controlling you. I'm God. You're dependent on me. By my will, you live, and by my will, you die. That's the happiness in the material world. And if you can't control anyone, you get a pet frog. You tell jump, and I'm in control. Just see my prowess. Higher. But if we become conscious of Krishna, then we don't need all this complication, nor do we need to control everyone, because we'll see that Krishna is controlling everyone, including me. His material nature, or the material nature, spiritual and material nature, is going to control me, that I'm not the controller, and therefore why should I bother to try and control others? Because I can't do it. All I can do is try and control my own consciousness, my own mind, and put it on Krishna without expectation I'm doing it in order to get something back. That I need more wealth, I need newer followers, I need some more admiration, profit, and distinction. I need something in the material world to make me happy. I need some combination of earth and water and fire and air and ether to make me satisfied. But it can't make us satisfied. It's like trying to embrace a shadow. How much love can you squeeze out of a shadow? You can try, you can imagine the shadow, just like people have such imaginations nowadays. They think that their dog loves them. The dog comes up and licks someone in the face. Oh, he loves me. He kissed me. But it's all imagination. I mean, besides the fact that the dog just licked its behind before it licked you. His offering is less than devotional. But actually, dogs lick people's faces, at least in India, because they're trying to find out if they're alive or not. And if they don't respond, then they bite their nose off first. So we think, oh, Fluffy loves me. He'd love to eat you. So the material world is just based upon an imagination of love and society and friendship. And of course, when people read the Bhagavatam, when they hear a lecture like this, they think, wow, this is really terrible. So pessimistic. Must be frustrated people who made up this philosophy. But actually, real love is there in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna is the unlimited reservoir of love. And if one is actually in contact with him, then one can experience one's natural loving propensity to the fullest extent. Unlimited loving propensity, that one becomes in love with everyone and everything. And without Krishna, one can't really love anyone, one can't really even properly love oneself. Therefore, the Vedic culture is made very, very simple, and everyone has something to perform in the Vedic culture just to get some food. That's the whole thing. Just to get something to eat, some shelter, and nice relationships with others based upon Krishna consciousness. Some etiquette of appreciation and devotion to help others. And that's the whole Vedic culture. And every other culture that deviates from that is more or less demoniac. That's all. That's what demoniac is. It's simply based upon dead material energy, impersonalism and materialism, which just takes the soul away from its natural environment. It's like a fish out of the water. You may give it a nice car, a nice house, a nice job, nice wife or husband, but because it's out of water, it can't be happy, no matter how much it accumulates. So similarly, without Krishna, nothing, we can't be happy in any circumstance. And with Krishna, we can become happy in any circumstance. And the Vedic culture of duty, especially performing sacrifice, charity, and penance, is just to help us so that we become unattached to the material energy, so we can become attached to the spiritual energy. The austerity of denying sense gratification or giving away excess belongings in charity or doing some sacrifice to please Krishna, it's just so we can think about him more easily, more purely, more consistently. And if we accept that, then we can make progress, and therefore we don't have to become envious of others who have something we don't have. And we don't have to be jealous. People don't have to be jealous of us that we have something that they don't have. We're in the consciousness that everything belongs to Krishna, and therefore everything should be used in Krishna's service. And if we do that, and we become, Krishna reveals himself to us, then we can be happy in any circumstance, in any kind of material opulence or material depravity. The six Goswamis were unlimitedly happy, although they lived underneath a different tree every night. Because they were absorbed in the mood of the gopis. Tyaktva, Dharma, how's that verse go? Sankhya, Purvaka, Namagani. No. Tyaktva, Tornam, Ashesha, Mandalapati, Shrenim, Sadatu, Chavan, Putvadina, Gunesha, Ko, Karunaya, Gopi, Nakanta, Shito, Gopi Baba Rasamrita Dilahari Kolo Lamognan Moor Pande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopala Go. So our hero is Rupa Goswami. He's our acharya. He's the Sampradaya Acharya, Rupa Goswami. We're all followers, we're all Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. And what was he doing? Tyaktvatornam Ashesha Mandalapati. He was a big, big leader in the Nawab Hussein Shah's government, but he gave it up. And he went to Vrindavan and lived like an ordinary mendicant begging from door to door. But he was so much enriched with the feelings of the gopis that he enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. So that's what we have to admire, and we don't have to unnecessarily deny ourselves our necessities, what we think we need. We put on heat in the temple yet, generally in the winter, even when it's summer. We do what's necessary to keep the body. So it's not indulgent, but at the same time, we're not overly concerned with its situation. So we can easily and happily think about Krishna. Therefore, Rupa Goswami is our hero. But then Sudama Vipra also, the childhood classmate of Lord Krishna, he had nothing, practically nothing to eat. When he went to Dwarka to give Krishna, to meet Krishna, his wife had to beg some chip rice, raw chip rice. Did you ever eat raw chip rice? It's not something you serve out at the Sunday feast. He took some raw chip rice to give to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was so poor, he couldn't even give him any fruit. But he was happily in Krishna's service. He was in ecstasy. When he got to Dwarka, he was in the spiritual world because he was in love with Krishna. And when he returned home, Krishna gave him more opulence because he had offered Krishna some offering of some chip rice that Krishna ate. Krishna reciprocated by giving him more opulence in the kingdom of heaven. But he was exactly in the same consciousness. He was in even more devotional consciousness when he got home, because he understood everything was the gift of Krishna, and therefore he appreciated how kind Krishna was. So whether he was poor or rich, it made no difference to Sudama. He was simply increasing, ever increasing, his love for Krishna. So that's what we have to do. If we get something, we should be happy. Krishna gave it to me to use in his service. And if he takes something away, we're also understand. Krishna is trying to make my life more simple so I can just think of him more easily all the time. I don't have to worry about so many things. So in any case, the idea is to focus the mind upon Krishna. And if we do that in devotion, in service to Krishna, especially to assist him in the Sankirtan movement, by telling others about Krishna, we have that opportunity, then the result is we'll be happy when we experience how loving Krishna is. And then we'll find out how loving we can be also spontaneously and naturally, because that's our nature. When we're in love with Krishna, we're in love with everyone and everything. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Sometimes this philosophy sounds very good when it's.
I hope it sounds good sometimes. But, I don't know what we'd be doing here if it didn't sound.
Like we should be very detached when we have something, it's not a problem. But when it happens to us, how can we?
Well, I didn't say that we should be so detached. First, we should become Krishna conscious. Then, when it happens to us, there won't be any problem. And if we're not Krishna conscious, whatever happens to us is a big problem. But when we hit something, big problem happens to us, then we should try to become Krishna conscious so the problem becomes minimized. But depending on how advanced we are, it's not that something happens, there's no problem. It may be a big problem to us. We step on a nail, it's not a big deal, it's a nail. No, we'll be in the hospital right away. We'll take it seriously. And we should, because it's Krishna's body. We shouldn't neglect it. But depending upon how much we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that would depend upon how big a deal the material world is to us, either favorably or unfavorably. So while we're struggling in the material energy, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, we should try to develop a sense of Krishna consciousness. Not a sense of detachment or a sense of attachment, a sense of Krishna consciousness, so that when things, whatever is happening to us, it won't change, it won't divert our minds from being Krishna conscious, that's all. But first, let's develop Krishna consciousness so there's something to divert. Our minds are not in Krishna consciousness, there's nothing to divert. Anything else? Hala Granth Raj Bhagavad Gita Kijai.